Can I ask you to introduce yourself?
Yes, my full name is William John Dell. I currently live in Gisborough. I was born in Middlesbrough in 1939, August the 2nd.
Yep, Middlesbrough. Something in common with a certain Mr. Cowley, come to think of it.
Yes, yes, there's a bit more in common, as I found
really?
Out.
Oh, so you live now in Gisborough, which you've, yes, you've already yes. mentioned. Where did your parents grow up? Are you sort of...
My mother and my mother is from a Whitby family, the Peats.
Right.
They moved up and down the coast with the, first of all, they were a fishing family, but then they went into the ironstone mining. And my father, Middlesbrough born, of second generation Germans, that came over to do in the steel industry in 1874. Actually, in the dye stuff side of things, rather than the steel making. But my grandmother had a series of, shall we say, friends who ran blast furnaces.
Right.
And some remarkable stories that she told me, as you'll find out later, came to live with me, where enormous amounts of money were made, and the blast furnace man gave the money out on a Saturday, and they spent it all on a Saturday night, virtually.
Sadly, that was much the way, wasn't it?
Then my father, in the Depression, went into the army for 15 years, came out, married my mother in, I think, 37-ish, and bought a house in Middlesbrough. I was born in 39, and he went back in the army. Now, with him having this slight German connection, I got his war records not so long ago, and he's been India, Malta, all over the place in the 15 years. But during the war, he was up around Carlisle, where the munitions were. And I have memories of living in Haltwhistle, Dumfries, Annan and Penrith, because when I was 14-year-old, he took me on we had a family tandem, he took me on a cycle ride to see all the places where, and I did remember a couple of places, because he'd cut a chicken on the hedge on one farm we lived on, and he was surprised to see it there, you know, 10 years later.
So you were an active family, your parents were obviously active people.
Yes, yes.
You know, you mentioned cycling.
I had a brother born in 41, but he only lived for a month or two.
Oh, right.
And then I have a brother who was born in 46, who's still alive. And still working in his 70s, because the company won't let him go, an American company. He's an electrical engineer, and
he
just
must be
can't
good.
Get them.
Yeah. Must be very good. Because weren't you an engineer?
Yes, I eventually, as you'll find out, worked at Dorman Long and became a chartered engineer.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then I moved into management, and subsequently became the managing director three times, three separate companies, all of which... in the construction game are no longer there, even the Dorman Long where I started my apprenticeship.
Yeah. We share a remarkably similar ancestry, because I have Germanic ancestry, in my case Austrian, from a mother, and I was technical and got into management, which, having got into it, a little bit yourself discovered I hated it. I mean, it really wasn't for me.
I did the family history just two or three years ago, and the German side, we're back to 1640. But on the male side, it stops very quickly. It's the female side that goes on and on. And there's one or two other offsprings, as you might say, have got to the same point, and we just can't seem to go any further.
You're at a block.
But it's surprising. I mean, they're not only the Dell family in Bierfelden, which is near Dusseldorf. They went to America, some of them, and... my great-grandmother's sister at 66 went to America with a daughter. She married a rich farmer. There's all these pictures of farms now on the web.
Wow.
You know.
66 is a late time in life to be starting to up and go to
especially in those days,
a new continent. I mean, that is... So there's an adventure streak in your family, really, right the way...
Yes, yes.
Right the way through, isn't there, really, it's fair to say.
Yeah.
So we move... gently onto the Lykewake.
Yes.
Now, the Lykewake is a very strange Yorkshire institution. You go back to its origin.
Yes. Well, I'll take it back just a bit before that, because it was a fairly dramatic time in my life, as you'll hear shortly. In the early August, there's a crowd of us, four or five, we used to go cycling a lot, and I used to fix up the youth hostels, and we went for 3 weeks up to the Trossachs, the lakes, and back home. And I got back home, and I had a carbuncle on the back of my neck, which you can still, the doctor came to the house, because my mother was dying of cancer, and I'd been from February in the downstairs front room. And Dr. Fleischmann, who was a family friend, a good German family.
I was going to say, a good Germanic name. Yes.
And very close links, people working for him and all that sort of thing. and he said, hadn't seen anything like it in his life. So it stopped me actually taking up my apprenticeship at Dorman Long for a week. So I get over that, I go and start work, and my friend David Pearson, his father was under Borough Treasurer at Middlesbrough, used to get the Dalesman. And he'd said to David, there's a walkie you lads should be able to do, sort of thing.
So, drop you. Did he do it?
I just said to me, mother and father, I said, we're going away this weekend, me and David, we're going to do a walk we've seen. Good. So we got the bus up to Swainby and walked up to the start and met these people from York.
So you'd never met before?
Oh, no, we just appeared there, you know, they didn't even know we were coming.
Really?
Yeah, that's right. It was just, you know, it says in the Dalesman, I think, I don't know what it precisely says, you know, this is where we 12 o'clock Saturday, the 2nd of October, you know. So we get there and there's all these people, and there was people from York, and I think there was a lady who seemed to be on her own, that somebody I've subsequently got to know seems to know her, and she actually dropped out halfway.
Was that Joyce?
I think that was it, yeah.
Yeah, I think it probably would be.
Yeah, and then there was this other chap from Gisborough who I learnt was driving the bulldozer and creating all the routes for the Forestry Commission, which were planting all around the north side of the North York Moors. So Bill Cowley, I mean, he was just a man I saw there, and he says, right, come on then, and off we went. And the recollection is a bit startling in some ways. At the beginning, off we went, and some said, oh, we're going up here. And I'd sort of got talking to this guy who drove the bulldozer, and my pal was with Bill Cowley. And then the next thing we know, we sort of round Coldmoor way at the lower level, and the bloke says, well, I've just dug a path, a route along here, we'll go along here, Bill. You know.
Sensible.
And the others go up onto the top and weigh in stones, and I think we met them at the main road to Hemsley. And the recollections is getting up onto Urramoor was all right and onto the railway. And then we cut across, I don't think we went to the Lion Inn, I think we cut across straight to Ralph's Cross, where Bill Cowley's wife and some friends have put a couple of tents up.
Right, Bill Cowley, that'd be Bill's first wife then, would it be?
Well, I wouldn't know how many wives he had.
Because his first wife sadly died. Now, you'll have either gone, I think, of two ways. One's by Escalates off the railway, and the other way is to cut across and come out at Old Margery. I suppose they both come out at Old Margery, come to think of it, so you didn't do the Lion.
I mean, the trouble is, the way we do it now, we cut across just after we've gone over the top of Westerdale.
That's right.
Well, there's a sign there now, anyway.
Yes, it's...
I was just past there 2 weeks ago.
Rather more civilised.
So the heather bashing was just something... I mean, I was 16-year-old. I weighed 3.5 stone lighter than I am now, you know.
Got the feeling.
So we got to the Ralph's Cross area there, and... there's these tents, so we thought, well, what do you do? We had a rucksack with some stuff in, and so we sort of sat on the floor, laid on the floor, and I would guess it was something like 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Everybody decides we're going to go again, you know.
Right.
So we wander around to, I think, roughly where it cuts across now, you know. So at this point... me and David are saying, like, where we're going next, because we hadn't got a map. We'd just gone to this man's organising a walk, you know.
And, well, yeah.
So this guy from Gisborough, he had a map, but he hadn't, looking back in my mind, he had trouble reading it, because I finished helping him now and again. I was a Boy Scout, you see, a Queen Scout. I think I was a Queen Scout by then. Perhaps not. No, I wasn't. I think Boy I got Scout. It a year later. Mm. went to Gilwell. So off we go, and the next thing you know, all I've got is this Gisborough lad and his map and me and sort of people ahead somewhere, and then we don't see them again for perhaps two and a half hours, you know. And he's, and I'm saying, well, we've got to go east, you know. And I said, I think from what I sort of know of the moors, I'd walked a little bit there in my time, you know, but nothing, nothing like I know now. And, you know, you don't drop off there on the left-hand edge, you know. And so we got to, a bit difficult to know, and perhaps the Wealdale stepping stones that are there now. I don't know whether there were stepping stones in those days.
I think there were.
Because I don't remember getting my feet wet there. We got them wet a bit later on. At
Farlingdales.
And, yes, exactly. Well, Farlingdales wasn't there then. And I'll digress for a minute on Farlingdales.
Yeah.
When I'm 21 year old, I've just done 3 years at what is now Teesside University, full time, paid for by Dorman Long. I'm on the management ladder, you know. Yeah. And a new British Standard came out, and these Americans came into the company because they'd been told to come in by the government to Dorman Long, and they said you were going to build Farlingdale Steelwork. So I'm in the drawing office at that point, and the section leader says, we're going to do Farlingdales, and you're going to do all the design all the joints for blast and everything, because there's just a new standard come out, and I knew it all. And they said, well, you know it all, you've just been to college, you know. So we did all that, and it went up, and life goes on. But I say, going back to where we were, I think we somehow met them roundabout there. But after that, again, they reared off. And this guy, he's slightly slower walker. And I just sort of chummed up with him, you know.
Yeah.
So him and I finished it on our own. And my pal went with...
off the back.
Just off the back. Yeah. And the trouble was, when we got over towards the Whitby-Scarborough Road, we were looking now, knowing where the route, we were slightly north because we went down and then up to Ravenscar.
Right. So you've gone slightly to the...
stoops from that way, you know.
The south, would it be? Or
no, north of Ravenscar.
North of it?
Yeah.
Oh, the wonderful farm with the suits of armour. Cockhow, is it?
No, something like that, yeah.
No, I can't remember the name of the farm.
But I remember we really struggled around there with climbing over all sorts of things, you know. Anyway, we get up to the Ravenscar Hotel at 23 hours, and that was it.
That was
and
it, informed.
At that point, photographs, and I wasn't drinking beer in those days.
Yeah, yeah.
And then David and I said, well, how are we getting home, like, you know? And I think Bill Cowley organised a lift for us, you know.
That sounds like Bill very much.
Well, in those days, you just went out the road and thumbed a lift.
Thumbed a lift,
I mean, it was not unusual to thumb a lift, you know.
Yeah. That is quite a story.
I get back home, and my mother, who was really suffering by then, and she died a month later, you know, which was not very good. But the sequel to all that is another couple of years go by, and my pal David goes to London University, comes up the Cairngorms in the first half term, slides down a gully and got killed. And that was it. So it wasn't the best of arrangements.
No, it wasn't, as you say.
But before that, David, he went to Middlesbrough High School. Arthur was, I think, the year above him. And Arthur had heard about David and me and said, why don't we do it there and back? So again, we get the bus up to Swainby. And I had a pair of sand shoes on. And we had sand shoes on, nothing more than that. And a rucksack. And I was into, I was pretty fit. And we did it in about 10 hours, 10 and a half hours there, turned round. Got back to Ralph's Cross, and it was really getting dusk by then.
Yeah.
And we were getting cramp a lot. And David and I said, hey, Arthur, we're knackered, you know. We're knackered with the cramping. Oh, I said, I'm going on. So off he went into the dusk and says he did it. I'm not disputing what he says. Yeah. Because he couldn't tell where he was on the route going there and back.
That's a bit of a concern.
I have met Arthur. He died just recently.
Yes, indeed. Sad loss.
I met him when Claire
Balding
came up for that
the Ramblings.
That's
program.
Right. Yes. I mean, she asked me a strange question. What's it like walking through Bracken? I said, and Heather, I said, it's difficult sometimes. Peculiar questions. Yes. Yeah. I mean, we were, there's no paths for most of it, you know. And
yes, that's it. It's all pre-path, isn't it? Certainly Wealdale must have been purgatory.
Oh, I mean, it was really deep. I do remember a bit of that. But then again, because you were fit, you know,
And in a group.
I was in a group of two. Yeah.
Wasn't there a sort of a buzz, this is something really, really new? But I suppose you had no idea what it was going to turn into, would you?
No.
It was just a walk.
It was really David's dad challenging him and I. Yeah. You know, that was the start.
So that's really what actually fired it.
Yes.
So and what were conditions like? Was it sunny, windy, wet?
Well, it was the autumn, you know, not hot, not cold, you know. And not windy, actually, from memory.
So it's really what you call perfect conditions.
It was ideal for walking.
For the time of year, especially, where you could have got a little bit.
I don't know what the York people thought, you know. Yeah.
But just going back to a comment you made earlier about sand shoes. So you were the first of the heathens who didn't use the heavy boots for everything on planet Earth.
Well, we thought if you're gonna leg it for 40 miles, 80 miles, in fact, you don't want to be carrying a whole lot of weight on, you know.
Totally agree with you. And I don't know if you've ever seen me, I wore boots to do the lake wake about 2 or 3 times, ever. And that was in winter conditions. The rest of the time I would wear, just like yourself, light-fitting, good quality shoes. You don't want rubbish on your feet because you'll pay for it, but good quality. And I think it's the way forward. I mean, look at it now, the people walking, it's all lightweight. Yeah. This material went around when you crossed, sadly, at first, whether it was leather boots or sand shoes, as you say.
I'm just trying to think what my boots would be like when I was 16. Had boots, because my father was keen on that sort of thing. So he used to cobble our shoes, my father. In fact, I learned how to put a heel on, if nothing else. No, I can't remember. I mean, in days of old, if you got a new pair of leather boots, you got them in the bath, didn't you, and wet them. And
battered them. And wore them around the house. It was much to your mother's consternation as you damaged the carpet. Are you okay for drink? You still okay for drink?
I'm all right,
Were there any stresses and strains on the walk? Because, I mean, we all know lightweights, it can get quite, what's the word for it? Quite intense at times,
I think the only stress was the fact that I was with I don't know what to call the gentleman, was the route finding that him and I were sort of evolving by pure chance, I think, really.
You mean Bill hadn't sussed it all out and knew it back? Oh, you were further back, weren't you?
He was gone. I mean, in today's world, you know, I'm a backmarker and...
Well, I was going to say health and safety. Yeah. There again, I mean, in those days, walking was more innovative. You thought on your feet, didn't you? Yeah. Nowadays, you say you have your navigator at the front, you have somebody in the middle, and then somebody at the back making sure nobody drops off the end.
I grew up with a group on a Wednesday, a U3A group from Gisborough. I mean, there was 21 of us yesterday, and we have a walk leader and a backmarker. But we do have people who want to walk in front of the walk leader. And we had one who's renowned, and he went the wrong way, and he's in his own car, and somebody said, well, let's leave him to it. But we did, we shouted him back. But we've got to learn.
Nothing much has changed in life, has it? There's always somebody who wants to race the leader.
Yes,
oh, can he navigate? No, but I'm still going to go ahead.
He thought he knew where we were going.
Not recommended. How did you feel on completing? Was it an elation sense, or was it just like a box ticked?
Like, we've done that, you know. Because remember, I was 16 year old, and we were with all these older people, and we were like, what are they doing and saying, you know, and that was it, you know.
So you were raised your own little community. I mean, Bill, he surprised me a little bit there, because I always thought Bill was very meticulous and had his walk planned for quite a considerable time.
A bit later on, I'd be 18. Yeah, after David had died, I think it was that same year. Bill came round to the house and said, "How would you like to go to the Himalayas on an expedition?" And he's me. Full-time education paid for. I went to see the boss to see if I could get a month off, you know, or whatever it was. he just looked at me and said, do you want to be an engineer or a mountaineer? And it was very simple. I couldn't afford to be a mountaineer.
It's two hellish good challenges, that is for sure, isn't it? You've got a career or... That is a tough ask, because the Himalayas must have been magnificent. Did you ever get subsequently to the Himalayas? Or
No. I finished Teesside University, as it's now called, at 21. I had a girlfriend of about 9 months, and my mother had died, and then my grandmother came to live with us. And then my father married again when I was 20, moved into a bigger house. I inherited 3 brothers and a sister, but the sister was married, and got a girlfriend, and he just, well, good idea, we'll get a flat and get married, you know. So we got a flat and got married. She taught biology and the like, so we had 2 children straight away.
Yeah.
I said, what's it all about, this marriage thing? So I now have a daughter, 61-year-old, and a son who's 59-year-old.
Yes, in fact, I think it was really through your son we actually got in touch, wasn't it, going back a little while, when we had the anniversary walk, would it be the 50th anniversary walk?
Yes, it probably would be. Yes, he's done it with me, and he brought a guy up about 7 years ago he worked with, he works London, came up and stayed with us, Frank. And off we went, and it was, we started with a thunderstorm.
Good start. At
half past 3, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Good start.
I was a bit wary of actually going up onto the top. Anyway, it seemed to settle a bit. And then it was just, the cloud was down, and he never saw the North York Moors until we got round to Ralph's Cross. So I have a video that somebody has given me, and I showed him the beginning of the walk.
I must admit, I think we all share the concept of having done the walk a few times and actually having seen nothing and just followed a compass needle.
That's right.
There's been a few like that. Yeah. And I think people are continuing to do it even now. I mean, it's surprising just how the walk is still getting great interest of all types of people.
Yes, yes. And you can put it on your GPS now, so you're pretty safe.
Yes. I mean, how do you feel about the technology side of things, the GPS?
I use it extensively.
Yes, I must admit.
I have a GPS. I'm in my pocket, I've got my iPhone, and yesterday I didn't take my GPS. The lady was leading the walk, and we'd been on it before. Yeah. But just to get your phone out, you just press a little button, it tells you where you are.
Exactly.
You know.
I mean, I love mine to bits, and I love my Garmin.
Yeah.
But every now and again, I will say, right, the Garmin is going in the pack, and I'm navigating it just to. Because you're always afraid, you hear these horror stories about when they get down to minus goodness knows what, that, you know,
I'll tell you where you can be out leading a walk and you've got you don't want to have it out with your hand, you know.
No.
And you get talking and you forget where you're going and you just follow the path, and sometimes you should have gone off. But that's happened a few years ago. We used to say, how many loops have we done on this walk, you know?
I know it's not necessarily relevant to this discussion, but I remember doing a crossing with Ben, and we had about 300 and some crossing between us, and we were doing an east to west in winter, and we were talking, as you say, and all of a sudden we ended up at Pinckney Shooting Box, and there was this sort of silence, and everyone looked at each other and said,
we
know where we are, but we shouldn't actually be here.
That's exactly what's
so easy just to be.
It does happen, yeah.
Yeah, it does, where you can actually.
You get talking with your head down, you know.
It was totally harmless. We had a bit of heather mashing and a bit of cursing, but.
But. And often the track invites you, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it does. Yeah. I mean, you know there yourself. I mean, that is a broad track going the wrong way.
Yeah.
And it's just so easy. Yes. You know, pitch black, not brilliant visibility, but really nothing special.
This Klingon's having a go at me, isn't it?
Slide it down the wire. So, no, that's. Did you keep in contact with people off the walk?
Well, they had one of the anniversaries, they had a dinner at Ravenscar, and that's when I think I did it with my son and that.
Yes.
But they didn't invite me because they said they couldn't find me. Well, I mean, I'm in the telephone book. I'm not ex-directory or anything.
Yes.
So I actually took my tankard. My wife brought the tankard round. We finished just in the dark.
Yeah.
Went round to the Ravenscar, and I said, fill that up. And somebody said, what's that? And I said, hey, it's you. And he said, we couldn't find you, you know.
Well, that wasn't in the days of the new club, because we had you. That must have been still the old club. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, it's a bit, you know, what happened with the old club closing and the new club forming is not ideal.
Well, he I got married, as I said, just turned 21. And it would be sort of fairly just after that he formed a club and they met at his Poteau farm. We went a couple of times, yes. And I'm not into singing dirges and all that sort of thing. I'm even conscious of what's going on here now. I had two young children, and I was actually doing a bit of spare time work to earn money. Yes. So I just drifted away. I just let it go.
Yeah. Mm. Well, as a lot of people have done. I know a lot of people drifted away from the old club in its latter days. It was getting quite interesting, let's say.
Yeah.
But a lot of people have drifted back. I mean, they sang
the names, I don't mean anything.
Still, they drifted very much back in again because you probably know yourself. It got very controversial as the old club closed.
Yes, yes. And it was. I think when I went in the Ravenscar Hotel, there was I can see this tall bloke whose name I think I used to have his email address. He used to partake in the run as well. Organising it all.
That wasn't Arthur did it initially, didn't he? But then Paul Sherwood took it over.
I can't remember.
Yeah, Paul Sherwood then took over running the race. He briefly went to Mandale, and it's now being run by Quakers at Darlington.
Oh, right.
And a very good race it is, too.
They do the whole walk, do they?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right.
The other way around. They do it as a race in July, and I've taken part in it a few times, but
There's a guy in our walking group does quite a bit of running. I must ask him if he's...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like he's just had a heart bypass.
The trouble is, you're not getting any younger, but hey, it's keeping doing what we're doing, what we can, while we can, isn't it?
Right. That's what we all say, yeah.
Both mentally and physically.
I wasn't on the walk just 4 months ago. We had a guy fall over, and another one who does scuba, giving it on his chest. And he said, I knew he was dead when I was doing it, but he said I had to do it. His girlfriend was watching me, you know. And we all said it's the way to go, really, you know.
We've all kind of seen the bad sides of it. I still think the best way is being shot by a jealous husband when you're about 97, isn't it? That must be a great way of going, but I aspire to it. But no, I mean, I remember Julie ended up doing CPR in January on a guy who'd collapsed. It's not nice. It was quite effective for quite a while afterwards.
We've had one or two drop out and keep in touch. They come to the dinners we have and whatnot. I've had a stroke and they get a bit wary of over-exercising, I think is the phrase, you know. I met a lady popped in yesterday. She's organising the Peak District holiday and she's going to partake, she said, but you can tell in her voice she's got an option of not partaking. She just wants to be with the group, you know.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I've retired myself to the backup duties now, which reminds me, next time you do a crossing, if you let me know the date and when you're doing it, I will try to come out there and
17th of June.
17th of June, and
we're
starting
now. Wait a minute.
Oh, is it a tricky one?
It's a tricky one.
There's
one or two in our group who he wants to start at 8:15 in the evening. He wants to do it in the dark.
Is he an owl?
He has two daughters. It's very off. Well, you've seen them, I think, last time you met. Two girls, one lives London, one lives Warrington. And they just sort of appear and do it and don't feel stressed. I mean, those steps right near the end, one of them runs up that. There's 349 we've counted.
That's not human. Can you resort to poisoning or anything? You know, just sort of give slippers, sleeping tablets or something to slow it down a bit.
Hey, and they've both had kids and everything, you know. It's
not fair.
No, it isn't.
It's not fair. Mm.
So that's when we're doing it.
But you're also thinking of doing the, dare I say, the 70th anniversary.
Oh, yes, that's the... I have a little website for these half dozen or so people, and there's a few signed up for that. We weren't going to do it this year, but this has just popped up. We're going to do it next year, then this year, then the 70th, you know.
That'll be absolutely astonishing to do it 70 years after the very first.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully you can.
Well,
the way you're looking now and sounding.
Wood. Yes, yeah, I mean, I've had my booster jab last week, which actually, it hurt after a day. It was all right on the day, and then a day later.
Which one did you have second?
I've had four now.
Me too, yes. It's kind of the norm for people of our... Yeah.
Pfizer.
I had two AstraZeneca and two Pfizers, which I think is the normal. Having a mixture.
Oh, I had all Pfizer.
Have you kept clear of it? Have you kept clear of COVID?
Yes. Good. Well, I think I had it before it was fashionable. In the January, when it was coming out, I have actually been to the doctors... probably now less than 20 times in my life. because when I was 42 year old, I went on a golf day organised by a friend of mine, and they reheated the buffet for when you walks in, chicken legs and things.
Reheated chicken.
I ate a leg or two and had my shower, had my beer. Next day, I fell over in the garden and... They took me to hospital and restarted my heart 5 times.
Really?
My wife said I had to go at you 5 times.
So was it food poisoning, but way beyond that it must have been?
It was a good bit of food poisoning, yeah. And, but they got my records brought over then, and I have this other number in my life called number 13. I lived at number 13, my father's birthday. And my records from the doctor at that point, I'd seen the doctor 13 times in my life.
That's good.
And they said, oh, we don't see much of you. So
the trouble is, they're unhealthy places, these hospitals. They're full of sick people, yeah. You don't want to go there, really. They're no fun.
That's right, yeah.
Can I come in with a challenge? It's a bit unfair, this one. Nevertheless, this is a picture of the end of the Lakewick.
Yeah, that's one of them, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see David. And
I was going to say, could you identify the people? David's second left.
And that'll be me there.
Bill, you are below Raven, is it? Yeah.
Oh, have you got the names of you?
Yeah, but I don't know if they're the right order.
Oh, I wouldn't know.
No.
Well, I didn't know any names.
No. So that must be...
We just met at a trick point and started
That
walking.
Must be so weird. I mean, we don't even do that nowadays with health and safety all that.
That's right, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm in the Ramblers Association, yes. On the local committee and everything, and you have an app if you want. You can just show it, and the walk lead has all your details and your health stuff if need be, you know. Yeah.
Well,
it's a long time. It's
funny, we're now talking about doing QR codes for the beginning and end of the Lakewick to see if we can get permission for it. Don't know whether we can or not. It's just an idea that one of our techies has put forward. Why not? You know, it's all there.
Yeah, it's hard to remember.
I'm sure. I mean, I have enough trouble. No, I have for breakfast. So, I mean, how you can recall 65 years ago of a Lakewick kind of beggars belief.
Yes.
Anything else we should have asked you that haven't? Or any other comments?
Any other comments?
What are your thoughts about the continuity of the Lakewick and it continuing as a walk?
Oh, I'm all for it. I mean... The more we have, it spreads the load on the land anyway, doesn't it?
Yes.
You know, I mean, the more footpaths we have, the better it is for everybody.
But of course, some of it is not footpath, as you know.
Well, you can. It's all on. It's not restricted anywhere.
No.
It's either on metalled roads or it's on open access.
Yeah. I just wonder though, because I don't. What are your thoughts on the definitive map, which has now been the date has been postponed? Footpath maps.
Yes, that's it's forever. You can put new paths on forever now.
Because I just have a little nag in the back of my mind that you know there was a risk that the landowner could say, "You're not going to cross Rosedale Moor now. We're shutting it."
Not going to
allow you over Rosedale Moor or Wealdale Moor.
Well, they can't. It's open access. Act of Parliament.
Yeah.
John Prescott.
Still have, God, yes, there's a name from the past, yes. So, still have this fear, you know.
I don't have that, no. The thing that, we've got some things lodged with the National Park where, we've checked the paths under their BVPI and we've also lodged it where the vegetation is up to your knees. Yeah. And we've said, what are you going to do? Are you going to mow it? But under the Countryside Act, all they need to do is put markers in, which I don't mind, just put some markers in. But they don't do either.
Markers in the national parks. Now, that's an interesting little subject in its own right. Official policy is totally opposed to markers.
Well, yesterday, coming down into
the
cliff, there was I was looking to the right. I nearly walked into one in the middle of the moor.
Yeah.
It was rather strange. I suddenly, what's this thing here, Sophia? With a sign on. You know.
Yeah, and the National Park sign on it. So there's a lot of ambiguity there, isn't there?
Yes,
they are opposed to the way marking. However, just near Gotland, there's way marks by the shooting butts. And there's another new one appeared. So... It's
under the Countryside Act, you either mow it or you mark it.
Yes.
You know,
yes. So it's interesting to see just where it does go in the future now and how it goes.
Well, I mean, I don't like the burning of heather. I think, why don't they just mow it? Apparently DEFRA's looking into that.
The landowners are still a very, very strong lobby.
Oh, and yes.
When you're on the local access forum, you realise just how... Probably it's a bit of a diversion. I used to organise the Oswald and the Phoenix, which you probably heard of, which was, became a trail race. And a bit like Bill Cowley's Leichhardt, it started off as a small little local run and ended up as a national. And most of the landowners, when you actually got to the people themselves, they were very, very easy to deal with and reasonable people. In fact, I would say all of them were. We had no trouble at all with the routes. Sometimes some of the agencies that kind of act on their behalf... and be tougher than the man themselves.
Well, we the Cleveland Group, look after 90-95% of the National Park.
Yeah.
And Redcar, Cleveland, Middlesbrough, Stockton, Easington District, Hartlepool, 840 square miles. We have 5 footpath officers.
Yeah.
2 of us do the National Park. And the fashion now is, out of North Yorkshire County Council, is an informal consultation. We have... 5 or 6 on the go. 2 are now down at Public Inspectorate at Bristol because we disagree with what they're doing. I've got one over there, Mulgrave Estate, wanting to move a bridle way, like a field away from this farm. And it turns out, a chance remark, there's further building work in a year's time. And I can tell you what's going to happen now.
Yeah.
It's going to be holiday accommodation. Because they said in, it's gone on for a year and a half at this point. I've just now, they've put an order out, supported by North Yorkshire County Council, and we've objected, that there would be farming activity last late August, September. I went 4 times at random times, took photographs. There's not even a dropping of sheep or cow or grain on the bridleway that goes through the back of the farm estate. And even the British Horse Society says, what they're promoting, this thing a field away. She said, you're mixing with possible cattle and sheep. There's no fences. And as I said, it's increasing the National Park's mileage to maintain, because it's under the Highways Act. They have to maintain it, not the farmer.
Yep.
And so we've said, if you really must move it from your backyard, as you might say, put it round the front. I'm occasionally in touch with a lady from the Bridleway Society, and she said it was there once before, or it was going to be there, and we've now learned it was there once before on a map, but it never got put there. Oh, it's a mind thing. But the thing is, they're going to move the path, and then when they go for planning permission for the extension, it's not going over a public right of way. And I've said we should hold on this until we see what the other plans are.
Well, you need to know what's proposed, surely, before you can do anything on that, logically. That's fascinating. I think that's a good time to call time on the day.
Right,
thanks,
thank
Bill.
You.
It's been an absolute pleasure to have a proper sit down. Because every time we meet normally, we're in a hell of a rush, aren't we? We're kind of, you know, doing something.
Well, one time when I didn't recognise you because you had a hat on.
That was a really hot day. That was the Cleveland Way 50th anniversary, wasn't it?
Yes.
And we were both disguised in sort of Lawrence of Arabia outfits because it was baking. We got talking. Thanks for your time.
I learned many years ago when I was over in America with a pal and the family on holiday, we played golf and we put a cap on. We got sunburnt on our ears.
Yeah.
I wear a hat now.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
and we then, there was a crowd of us used to go, I played golf for 25 years, and a pal of ours had a place in Spain, and we used to go there end of March every year for 15 years. And you could get sunburn on the back of your legs, which was...
Behind the knees is the most painful.
That's right. Yeah, we had a colleague, he was a policeman.
Yeah,
he really suffered with it. You know, it was unbelievable.
Yeah. It's horrible.
I mean, I tan, but I never sunbathe.
Do you always find the problem isn't so much at the time; it's when you get in the bath afterwards, and the water tries to move away from you. It hurts.
I only shower now.
You do. I can't blame you.
I have baths in hotels where I'm paying for it.